Right, so welcome back. We left our listeners dangling over the Colorado Rockies, holding on for dear life. You got a quote to start us off here, Andy?
I've got some bad news.
Oh, no.
Tried to tie it in nicely with the cliffhanger movie. Unfortunately, it's such a rubbish movie that there's nothing worthy.
That's so, not the way it sticks in my mind. I feel like it was an awesome movie. Yeah.
So I guess we've got to move on from the quote for this week and move forward. So the cliffhanger was, what are some ways that we can assess during the project-based learning? And I'm going to pass it over to you because you talked to someone about this.
Yeah, absolutely. So I promise we sat down with Tom Collins, mm-hmm. who is the primary science, head of science for British School of Chicago, Lincoln Park. Also a Nord Anglia school. And so we sat down with him and he shared one of the ways that he does it, assessing project-based learning. And yeah, I thought it was really good. And so we'll kick off with that.
Okay, nice.
I think my favorite tool for assessment is just sitting back with a clipboard and taking notes. When you're doing project-based learning, you can't be interfering all the time because then you inadvertently are guiding the child down a path that you're predetermining. If you want to see what they're getting out of it, you have your criteria, your success criteria, your rubric, whatever, on a clipboard. You just sit back and you just tune in on conversations around the room. And if a conversation's going away that you think is getting distracted, you just go and intervene with behavioural type management stuff. But you get so much data just going around and listening. I've also used things like Google Science and Seesaw to take digital records of what's going on, and being able to talk over that and record your thoughts is really cool. So yeah, I feel not getting too involved with the children when they're doing a task is the way you'll get the rich data out of it, I think.
That was really nice to hear from Tom and to hear his thoughts about that. What have you got from that?
Yeah, well, he was saying that really rang true. He's wary of leading them down a predetermined path.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And so I think in many ways that is essential to project-based learning, is that the kid has got ownership of what they're doing and they're deciding where they want to learn. But I am also sort of cognizant of the fact that as a teacher trying this out for the first time, you've got to ease into that, right? Yeah. You can't just, for your sake and for the kids' sake, you can't just throw them into, what do you want to do? Go do it. Mm-hmm. You've got to kind of, you might start by setting the context and, you know, the themes and kind of and letting them just decide what the outcome is. And then you gradually pull that back and give them more and more freedom. So yes, ideally, eventually, you know, letting them choose their own path is the way you want to end up.
Yeah. And I think though that the predetermination isn't from the as you're going along, it's probably the start where you set up the task, right? Is that you have set it up in a way that you know what information that they're going to need to come and grab and understand to be able to finish the project properly. And that's that definite, when they're defining what the problem is at the start, then hopefully they will get what you want from them, and though they'll be approaching it in different ways and getting to slightly different places, it's probably going to be quite similar. Would you agree with that, or am I off point there?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, again, it depends on how much you're there's place for everything.
What
else did you spot?
Well, I sort of had a couple of questions as I went along and thought, I think I've probably got a bit of a handle on this myself, but I think it would be a question that I would have if I was starting out with this. When Tom talks about just standing back and observing, I wonder what he means by that. Like, what data is he looking for? What is he trying to collect along the way? Like, that can be quite a big and frightening thing if you're just starting out, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So we together started to kind of come up with a bit of a model of what these kind of things would be that you're assessing. Yeah. And we were thinking that there are kind of three aspects, right? So you've got your content and your conceptual.
Yeah.
So your knowledge and your understanding that you want to kind of measure. And this comes back to the question that I had that we presented at the start of last episode was, you know, would the project-based learning just be a way of teaching this stuff?
Yeah, okay.
In which case you'd assess it the same way you would have assessed it anyway, right? Because they either learnt it or they didn't learn it by the end.
Yeah.
And that is only true for, I think, the content and concept, right? There are other aspects that you might want to assess when you're doing a project-based learning unit because it allows you to, right? And that's the cool thing about it is like you can, there's more we can do. So one of those is the soft skills, right? What kind of soft skills would you normally be looking at in grade five?
For us, I think a lot of it is around, we might be looking at the thinking skills, the critical, creative thinking skills that you'd have there. Obviously, communication is going to be a really big part along the way, and probably organizational skills as well.
Definitely.
Being able to assign roles within a group and just like having a plan of how they're going to approach this bigger picture, this bigger project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to me, I mean, that one is a really obvious one that observation is so critical because how do you, you know, looking at some kid's finished product doesn't necessarily tell you whether they collaborated well or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just because they came out with a good product, they could have done it all themselves or could have just pinched it from someone else. Like, you know, you've got to be there observing for that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing that you can really get out of project-based learning is assessing the technical skills.
Yeah.
So whether it's, you know, actually building something, some kind of engineering skill, some kind of technological skill using whatever, or a presentation or whatever it is. But so there's all kinds of really rich technical skills that you could be looking at as well.
Cool. So there's a, so there's sort of the three main things that we would be looking at. And obviously Tom's just talked to us a little bit about that, that one way of assessing, which is like stepping back and taking notes and whatnot. What are we going to do with that data? Is that a good question for now, or do you want to park that?
Yeah, let's have a go. So what would you do with the data? So to me, it sounded like Tom was describing noting down little episodes, little anecdotes, little things that happened, right?
Yeah.
Which is great for the teacher, I think, in knowing kind of what, how to help the kid next. You can feed that back to the kid. So again, it's good for the student. But then he did also mention the digital records thing. So, you know, where would that sort of become useful in your experience?
Something that I've sort of used for the digital records is I've been using Google Keep quite a lot to like track things. You can easily take notes and then add a collaborator as well. So you could add the student as a collaborator so they can see the feedback that you're giving to them. That's a way that I've used that sort of digital technology as a way to keep track of things.
Cool.
You might be able to organize yourself a spreadsheet, I guess, and keep track of the skills that you're aiming to hit throughout this project-based learning and sort of like tick them off for the students as they go through. Because it is important to keep a track of how they're going with those skills. It's not something that you just want to leave to chance.
Yeah, nice.
I guess. And I just want to chuck something in here that I think it's really important that when we're taking these notes and giving feedback, we have these things, but we're also trying to encourage students have positive beliefs about their own ability.
Okay.
So the feedback needs to be like identifying these things that they're doing well as well, but also I guess giving them a chance to know that, oh, you have done this really well, but you can add to this as well along the way maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and identifying those problem solving skills possibly.
Yeah. Nice one. Also just on digital records, we talked last episode about the parents need having a role in like how you know the kind of information you're collecting and delivering. Digital records are great for that, right? So Seesaw is something that Tom was pointing out, right? Which we use in our school. Like, bam, there's a way to engage your parents, get them to understand where their kid is at without throwing a letter grade at them.
Yeah.
You know, here, you know, your kid was collaborating amazingly in class. Here's a photo of it, here's a video of it, here's a description of what of it or whatever, but that digital record can really get that job done.
Yeah, nice. And that I've used the photo with audio as well.
Oh, yeah.
And then you can sort of, it's available there to listen back to, which gives it a little bit more I don't know, it's a little bit more personable maybe as well at times. So yeah, Seesaw, thank you. That's a great job.
Yeah, cool. All right, let's take a quick break in activities. Okay, Andy, so something that we noticed popping up throughout this, and this is probably true of assessment in education in general, but we were talking about, you know, having a balance between quantitative data.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be your letter grade or your attainment level or your, you know, you succeeded or did not succeed or whatever it is, versus your qualitative data. So maybe anecdotes, little stories and moments and things that, you know, showed you some kind of a learning experience. Pros and cons to both, but let's unpack it a little bit.
I've always find myself veering more towards the qualitative data. I don't know what it is about me, but I like that sort of process of like trying to spot the skills that the student is showing and being able to see them as a person and not just sort of the data, if that sort of makes sense. And it's like, yeah, trying to unpack who they are as a learner and like what they're doing well and what's next for them in terms of their skills. I really enjoy that. But obviously there is the other side of that coin as well that you have to address.
Yeah. Well, no, I do agree with you. I think, you know, we talk about every kid being unique and every kid being on their own path and, you know, how you... Every kid's going to demonstrate in a different way that they can do something or, and, you know, particularly in a project-based learning context where you don't necessarily know what path they're going to take.
Yeah.
Right. So how could you predetermine attainment levels, for example, if you don't actually even know what it is they need to figure out?
Yeah.
They're going to figure it out as they go. So, yes, I mean, this, you know, becomes obvious that the qualitative is going to be sort of one of the best ways, whether it's through your observation or through some other form of assessment. But there are probably ways that you can turn that into quantitative, I think, right? Like you can sort of use that as your evidence pool and then kind of condense that into a kind of easier to understand and track.
Yeah.
Can or can't or whatever.
Yeah. And I think that as well, if you're listening for the types of questions that they're asking of themselves or to other people around the class as well, then that can give you an understanding of where they are with the content and the concepts as well. Like depending on the questions they're asking and what they're finding out can clue you into where they're going with that understanding of what we want them to get from it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. There's a resource we may have talked about before, but we'll throw it out there again because we've used it before in our classrooms. Out of the Teaching Systems Lab, the Maker Elements or Beyond Rubrics is the project, Rubrics, right? So tell us about that.
So Beyond Rubrics have come up with a sort of like a list of Maker Elements, and then you can. We chose to focus in on one of those Maker Elements, and we use some little. Or essentially post-it notes that had the Maker Element on it. And we just went around and we stepped back, like Tom was suggesting, and we sort of looked really carefully for evidence of the students doing these things. As they did them, we'd just quietly give it to the student and then walk away and observe some more.
Yeah.
I really felt like it forces you to, like, you know exactly what you're looking for, which is something that you need to know, but it also made you make a conscious effort to check in with the students in your class, and I think that's really important as well, that you don't miss those ones that sort of fly under the radar.
Sure, and it gives them that feedback then and there, like rather than at the end of the class where they're like, you said, oh, remember when you did that? Kid doesn't remember, right? Yeah. It was ages ago. But then also, what are these other things I was going to say? It was a really good thing.
Oh, I can pad for time.
Go on.
Because going through that process as well sort of because they're getting feedback of the skill that they're doing, it's sort of building that positive belief about their own ability within that particular skill. And so then it's just sort of like it's raising them up as you go. And then, like Tom said, like stepping back, then at a different point you can come back to and go, oh, this is what you got. This it was great to see you use this. And you can use that as a point of starting the dialogue, I guess, about their learning and what's next for them as well.
Awesome. Yep. And I do remember what I was going to say. it was basically that, you know, if you are looking out for, I think in one of the times we tried it out, we were looking for collaboration, I think. Mm. And so when you're specifically looking for that, you'll notice like all the different ways that it could possibly present.
Yeah.
And it's always different. It might've just been that they encourage someone to get involved and bring them into the circle, or it might have been that they gave team roles. Like there's so many things, and you're not restricted to like, did they show this particular like specific thing in a rubric, or did I just notice something that to me shows this, you know, and you can just jot it down. So you're more open to possibilities.
Yeah. This is me banging my drum once again, but I like, a really important thing with all these things that you're trying, and if you want to take your teaching and learning further in whatever direction it is, I think finding those people that you work well with and that you can challenge and it be a safe space between you two, because we did it together.
Yep.
And I think that I would have had 4 or 5 or maybe even 10 times when I was like, I saw this, I can tell it's really important and valuable. Can you help me sort of work out how it fits in with this? And our conversations together sort of got me to a point where I could go, ah, yeah, totally. I totally agree with that. And I see that, which means that I can see it further on as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that I've got it with my grade 5 colleagues as well. But
nice.
Finding those people that you can challenge each other and feel safe with each other and work with each other on those things is really important.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that. All right. I think a quick little break, and then we'll come back in and talk about something you do a lot, particularly with the exhibition, doing like interviews and reflections. Yep.
So as you said before the break, Jack, that something that we do in grade 5 at the school is we do the exhibition, which is a culmination of all their learning throughout grade 5.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout primary, sorry. And it is essentially a giant project-based learning. And something that we do, which helped me out a lot, is employing the sort of idea of interview along the way. But it's sort of partnered up with a reflection as well. So you can't... We found that we weren't getting enough information if you're just interviewing or if you're just reflecting. And so we brought the two together and felt quite successful.
So just so that I'm understanding where you're coming from, so is interview your meaning discussions along the way, and then you're setting that aside from reflection, which is just at the end, or what is the distinction?
Really good question. So our reflection was ongoing. Throughout, we'd give them chances to reflect. We'd encourage them to reflect every day.
Yep.
But that wasn't always successful, and it wasn't always meaningful. So it sort of evolved as we went. At the end of it all, we had a reflection around the soft skills, the ATLs, and then I think the interview was really important to get an understanding of the content and the concepts that they had sort of uncovered along the way, and that whole idea of what is how they grew as a learner.
Okay.
And I think the interview works really well there because you need those follow-up questions. Like you as the teacher, and you know your kids well, you sort of can hear that they're trying to say something, and you've got to jump in and ask the question to sort of push their thinking a bit further on. And you can't always do that with the way that we organized our graphic organizer for reflection. So I thought that's really powerful.
Okay, cool. And just as on a practical sort of thing, how would you try and keep them a little bit separate, like so that they don't come out of an interview and then just write all the exact same thing down in a reflection? Or would you go the other way around, let them reflect first and then come to you? Or is there anything...
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure that we went the reflection first.
Yep.
That was part of it. And mm-hmm. then we would just be grabbing them. But we sat down as a grade team and we sort of came up with questions that we thought would be the best questions to get the information that we wanted out first.
Okay.
So we sort of made sure that there wasn't too much overlap in that area. And then there's always scope for, if you read someone's reflection on their skills, then there's always room to go, oh, do you know what? I don't feel like you've given me enough here for some of those kids who find the reflection process harder.
Mm-hmm.
And you can grab them aside and just have a follow-up interview as well. And so I think that, again, knowing your kids was key for us in this. But that dual approach was quite handy to make it sure in our minds when we came to reporting that we were clear on who they were as a learner throughout that whole process and not just the final night of the exhibition.
Awesome. All right, cool. Yeah, I mean, that to me makes a lot of sense. I definitely believe in the ongoing reflection thing. Mm-hmm. I think you just can't leave it too late.
Yeah.
I mean, the more often you can do it, or the closer you can do it to what they've just done is really important for the kids, because they move so quickly and they'll, you know, forget and what they've just done.
Yeah, and we've found this year with a new batch of kids coming through,
mm-hmm.
we've found that what they see as reflection is quite a, like in some ways that they do it quite well, but it's trying to take the reflection just from that specific task and see it as how can I use this information as the bigger picture thing. And so you need to make sure that throughout the whole year you have enough moments of reflection so you can actually spot, okay, so this is your strength within reflection, but you need support to go to this place with your reflection as well. And so, yeah, if you just do it once a week and there's a week between, it makes it really hard to sort of support them on that journey.
Sure. I'm asking this because I know it's something you've been thinking about. In that reflection, how do you frame it in a way that they're going to put in things that they need rather than answers that you want, right? Because they know what you're looking for and they're just going to slip it in there because they're smart.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, it comes back to that working for the grade type idea.
It really does. And yeah, we've had the conversation, right? My situation is that sometimes I feel like when we're asking kids to do things, it's very much autopilot. It's very much a learned thing of, oh, if I have to ask questions, these are the types of questions that I need to ask.
Yeah.
And they don't really care about the answer. They just know that this, to get a good grade or to be seen as someone achieving where they need to be, then these are the questions that I ask.
When I say this question, my teacher looks down and ticks in his book or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And so that is something that is an ongoing challenge for me, I think. But I think by shifting it to the idea of giving feedback along the way and it not just being a grade that you're looking for, you're not just going for the tick or the cross, you're not just seeing it, but to give some feedback back to them and get them to respond to that feedback
sure.
as well.
Okay.
So you're always coming back to it. So they'll hopefully start seeing it as, oh, this is part of my process to go on and be more successful within this project.
Yeah, cool. Maybe. Well, yeah. Speaking of process, I think the kind of last sort of method that we want to touch on is tracking that process,
yeah.
right? And so I guess I've just sort of written down the term, you know, process journal
mm-hmm.
without necessarily having a expectation of what format that looks like. It okay. could be literally a book or whatever,
yeah.
but...
And that's something that, like, I'm really interested in your thoughts because it's something that I've had some success with, but mm-hmm. often it can feel like it's a really forced and a very teacher-driven idea of what a process journal should be, and you go through, like, anyway, I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, sure. Well, so the process journal is a really significant part of MYP design, which I teach, and... To me, the most successful process journals that I've seen, or, you know, the ones that to me really demonstrate the students' learning and whatever, yeah. is when it is highly specific to their process that they actually went on in creating this product.
Yeah.
And the thing about that is every person's creative process is very different from each other, right? And certain steps take longer for some people. Certain steps take a lot of iteration before they move on. And so I'm just in general wary of telling them what part to add to their process journal at each time and keeping kids on a certain thing. Like today we're brainstorming ideas. Yeah. Tomorrow we're going to be making a decision. You know, they might need longer or shorter depending on where they're at. And so in the MYP design, there is this design cycle that has these kind of clear steps and segments that you can go on. But I don't like kids to kind of follow that to a T because you can really stifle their creativity if you say, right, stop whatever you're doing because I need you to add this to your process journal today.
Yeah. And then it also encourages this idea, even though it's a cycle, that it's quite a linear cycle, if that makes sense. And like where you have to go back and then go forward and then you might be able to go forward two steps, but oh no, and then you got to go back. And I think that... if you're just sitting down and going, today is this, and then next week is this, then it really,
Yeah, and well, absolutely. You're telling the kids that you should have done that and you should have gotten it right and you should be now moving on, whereas they may well need to go back and do it all again because they're not satisfied with where they're at.
Yeah.
And that's what a process is.
Yeah.
I think the best process journal is going to be pretty messy, visual, I would say. Lots of drawings, lots of sketches, lots of quick getting things out of their brains because they just needed to spill it somewhere, that kind of stuff. And it, you know, it doesn't necessarily make for a really nice presented document, but it's the real process. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, and that's, and I guess the thing is when you give that freedom, then you can bring it back to the conversations to make sense of things that you don't understand.
Sure.
And then, but it's in their way of thinking already, so they'll have an attachment to it and they'll be more likely to know exactly what they're thinking at that time because it's their way of thinking, not the way that they've been told to do it.
Definitely, that's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah. There's been a lot of excited microphone knocking today. We're both flailing the arms around, so I just want to apologize for any noises along the way.
Yeah, squeaky chairs as well.
Yeah. But oh no, something that I did want to say was that whole idea of people working at different paces. We had a staff meeting on Monday morning, I think it was, and it was you had to read a part of a text and then get together with the rest of the group and sort of come up with a visual for it. And it was a really enjoyable process and worthwhile. But I need to take my time when I'm looking at some writing I've got to read. I want to take it in. I want to take some, like, write on the bit of paper and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But other people, they just love to zoom on through and like, okay, I've got this. That's how my brain works. I'm sorted. And it does, like, bring that whole idea that, yeah, we have to let the kids operate at their speed, providing they don't take the mickey and just like drag the chain forever.
Sure.
But I guess it must mean as well that when we're thinking about this as assessment, we have to be making sure that we're bringing in the assessment that we want along the way. Or maybe that's where the process journal comes in, right? Is because it's like you can constantly see that as you go. But I think it's worthwhile thinking about the timing of things as well as you're going and for the different kids.
Cool.
I've gone in circles there, but
awesome. Righto. Well, let's take another quick break and then I think we're getting close to being able to wrap this thing up.
Yeah, nice one. So we're back and we're going to start wrapping things up.
Sure.
I'm going to talk as a dad, as an educator as well. And I want to finish off with this question because, you know, we want kids to grow up as challenging the status quo. We want them to grow up to be like problem solvers and that. So here's my question. If we want adaptable, critical and analytical thinking, how does our assessment reflect this?
Yeah, well, definitely. That's the problem that we're trying to solve here is I guess you have to have adaptable and creative ways of assessing, right?
Yeah.
If your students get to the point where they are actually adaptable, I mean, you know, and truly creative in their things that they're exploring, then you can expect as a teacher that you will find yourself in uncomfortable situations where you don't really know what you were looking for and you don't know what's going to happen next and all kinds of cool stuff that is difficult to plan for, maybe impossible to plan for.
Yeah.
And so your assessment method has to have that built in, I think. And so some of the things we've talked about, I think, kind of do.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, I think for us, we just got to try these things out and see where it works and where it doesn't.
And something, find out. And something that I sort of want the students to know in my class as well, I want that assessment practice to be quite transparent, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they have to know that actually this is what I'm valuing, that this is what I'm looking for in you, and this is what I want to support you to do. So students need to be really clear on like what we're assessing and why we're assessing it and things like that. So I think that...
And maybe also you're modeling by trying out some kind of new assessment thing. You're modeling to the kids, I'm trying something new here because I want to take some risks and I want to be a better teacher, and I'm not sure if this is going to work, but here's what we're going to try. And then they, you know, that you're setting the tone for innovating and risk taking in your class.
It's really interesting. I have said that to the kids. It was just last week I did, but I've just realized I never came back to that and then asked them to sort of give me some feedback on how that all went. Was it worthwhile or was it really stink?
And so nice.
Maybe that's the next step for me with it as well.
Cool.
But this conversation, I don't know. I've got excited by reading the Joe Bowler book, same, which is all a curriculum. I've got excited by the discussion. So now I guess it's up to me to take the leap and make sure that I'm starting to bring this into the classroom. And maybe like coming back at some point and just having a little chat about successes and challenges that were faced along the way as well. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. I'd be keen to revisit this. I'd also be really keen to hear from our listeners of things that they're doing with project-based learning and ways that they've tried assessing that have worked.
Yeah.
Where are they going to hit us up on that?
They're going to hit us up on Twitter at Risky Business or at Risky Business Ed. And obviously we can be contacted by Gmail as well, which is riskybusinesseducation@gmail.com.